What if financial freedom didn't take a lifetime? What if it could happen in just 11 years? Well, maybe it can. So welcome to Making Sense, the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee. I'm Frances Cook, a financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker who makes money simple for you. Now, Ruth Henderson and her husband weren't on high salaries. They didn't get an inheritance. They were just an ordinary Kiwi couple who figured out how to save, invest, and used it to change their lives. They went from everyday workers to work optional in just a smidge over a decade. Now, Ruth is known as the Happy Saver, and she's all about sharing the tactics of financial freedom, including sharing the numbers of how she did it and what life looks like on the other side. So how did they crack financial freedom so fast? And what lessons can the rest of us steal for ourselves? Joined now by Ruth Henderson from The Happy Saver. She's a podcaster. She's a blogger. She's basically one of the pioneers of the financial freedom movement in New Zealand. So welcome, Ruth. It's been a while since we talked and the first time having you on this podcast. So nice to be talking again.
It's lovely to be talking again. It has been exactly 3 years I worked out, Frances, since we had our last korero. So we've got a bit of catching up to do.
We definitely do. Look, so many people would know of you as the Happy Saver now because you've been talking about this. You've got, I would say, a really strong cult following for the Happy Saver content that you put out. You've talked to so many people about your financial freedom journey, their financial freedom journey. But there was a time before this was your alter ego. And I want to start there. What was life like before you discovered financial independence?
It was very spendy. We had a great time. So I'm 51 now. My husband, Johnny, is 52. And I've always been interested in money, but didn't have a focus for that interest. And so went through university, met Johnny, got good careers and the likes of that. We're talking about it this morning, actually. Our peak income was probably about 170 grand. So this is going back 20 years sort of thing. And we just spent it all. We had a great time. And we bought a house. And because our income was good, we actually paid that house off within 5 years. Money stayed in the, you know, stayed in the bank, spent that, cars, holidays, great time. And then it just started to turn where I started to think about, instead of spending money, what can you do? You can save money. Is there an alternative to saving? And then gently I worked out, yes, there is. There's something called investing. And so then I just started on that trail. But me finding that information coincided with the end of our double income, no kids. And we had our daughter who turns 18 shortly, which is unbelievable. So basically for the last 18 years, both Johnny and I have either worked part-time, not at all, some brief full-time stints for one of us, self-employed, PAYE employee, etc. So we actually, once we twigged onto personal finance, we earn the least of what we've ever earned, but the difference is that we make far better decisions with every dollar that we do make. And so over the years, I had forays into different types of investment. And then I've really, in the last 5 years, tweaked it down to a really solid investing pathway now that we are just firmly on, no longer getting sidetracked, and we're just into it. So yeah, that's sort of, it's been a long journey, but that's the same for everybody. We learn as we go.
100%. Yeah. When I look back at where I started with things, it was very baby steps at first. I can tell you, though, I do remember having quite a sudden turning point of becoming interested in money quite suddenly, for at least for myself. You know, that late 20s point where you hit a, and I think a lot of people hit this, not everyone, but it's almost that sort of late quarter life crisis where you're like, actually, I thought a whole bunch of things would happen as I became an adult. It's not working out the way I thought it would. Everything is so stressful. What am I doing wrong? And when you start with that money foundation, it lets you achieve so many of the other things that you might be worried about too. And so I remember quite a firm turning point for myself in at least becoming interested in money. And then from there, the different habits and tactics grew. What about you? Was there a firm turning point in becoming interested, or was it a bit more of a slow burn?
always been interested. Like, I'm the youngest of five, and if you ask any of my siblings, they'll be like, oh, Ruth is the one counting her 10 cent pieces. Like, I've always been interested, but no guidance anywhere. Awesome parents, wonderful upbringing, lovely family, but no money education there. So without that knowledge, and like, I grew up in really small towns, so it's not like you could go out and about and bump into people who were doing really well economically. That just wasn't who I was around. And so I always had the interest, I just didn't have the focus. And as time went on, and then I realized, like with most things in life, if you want to sort anything out, go and sort it out yourself, that I started taking a real interest in my money, which is, you know, what I advocate for everybody. Nobody's coming to save you. You really honestly have to put in the mahi and the effort to work this out yourself. Once I started to get interested, that the deep dive began, the books, the websites, and then, you know, going to the banks, realizing, not for me, dig. And I just carved the path for us. And now that's with the blog and the likes of that. I had to reinvent the wheel. And I don't want other people to waste all those years reinventing the wheel. Like, there is I've worked out the basics as of you. And now that I'm on that path, Still always learning. Still, like, anything money chit chat related, I'm reading it, I'm listening to it, I'm talking to people. I have conversations like this every single day. So I can't see my interest ever waning, but those behaviors of what to do with my money are now pretty locked in.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what were some of the first steps you took then?
First steps were definitely tracking net worth.
Mm-hmm.
Just started noting down, well, where is my money? It's like, so starting with the bank accounts. Then when KiwiSaver came along, put my KiwiSaver account. And so every single month I'd log into my KiwiSaver, Johnny's KiwiSaver, what is the balance? And then that data has just built up year on year on year. And it's actually quite interesting now to look back on, well, what did I used to, where did my money used to be? You know, it was in one bank account. Now it's spread over 10. The first step is absolutely track your net worth. And like, I talked to a couple yesterday and they were like, oh man, we just don't feel like we get ahead. And I think a lot of people feel they don't get ahead, but when they actually look down at their numbers, they're doing okay. Because if they're in KiwiSaver, it's gone up, if they're in a low fee, decent fund, that is, from the year before. So until you know by tracking your numbers, feelings are kind of pointless. Start tracking your money. So that's the first thing. Net worth, first of every month, is my most exciting day. I bounce out of bed and I update all my numbers. I know what we spend and I know what we earn, and we must spend less than we earn. And if you've got a partner, talk to them about it as well. Don't go on a solo journey.
So hard if you are working against a partner. And I think we'll talk more about those strategies in a minute, because you have very generously offered to actually share real numbers of what you're doing with your money. And I think people will be fascinated by that, because a lot of people are nervous, and fair enough on that, to share their money actual numbers. But when we get the opportunity, I think it really, really does bring some light to it. But first, I want to talk about the life side of this, because that is super important. You became work optional pretty quickly on this journey. Talk to me about what it actually means to you to be work optional and how fast you were able to get there.
Work optional was everything. It's like, and work optional was just that. If I wanted to go back to work, to a full-time job, part-time job, I could do that. But if I don't want to, which I currently don't want to, I don't have to do that. And so when we talk about money, financial independence, it's not, and it was always financial independence, retire early, the FIRE movement. It's not so much about that anymore. It's about financial independence. If you want to work, go to work. If you don't want to work, you don't work. So we've given ourselves options. That's all good money management does. It just gives you options. And so for us, the work optional stuff came in relatively early, because when we knew we wanted to have a child, I knew I didn't want to worry about money. And so I actually up and quit my job. The day I finished my job to go on maternity leave, it was permanent leave. And so we thought, right, we'll give this a year, and we'd put money aside for that. But Johnny had a full-time job, so that was okay. And then we got to the year end of year one, and I thought, well, now we have to go back to work. And then we're looking at the bank accounts, and we're looking at I know what we are earning and I know what we are spending. Actually, I could stay at home a bit longer. And I felt that real pressure to go back to work. I just knew I didn't want to. So we're like, let's just give it a bit longer. And then another year went by and another year went by. And then eventually when our daughter was 4 and a half, I kind of fell into a job. Once again, we had options and it was like, yeah, actually, I do feel like going to work now. So off I went to part-time work. So Johnny stayed at home and he had a full year off while I was working part-time. And so when did we start having this ability to adjust our working hours? 18, 20 years ago.
Wow.
And it wasn't even strategic, Francis. It was kind of like, well, will this work? I'm big for forecasting ahead, and that's not so much with the numbers. It's like, what is coming up? And so we were like, well, we're going to have a child. That's coming up. What does that look like? And I'm always talking to people ahead of me. I had this amazing conversation with a 79-year-old woman yesterday, and just chatting like, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What's going on for you? What might work for me? So I was always looking ahead, and I still do. Like, our daughter's off to university next year. So years ago, I sat down and it's like, well, what does university cost? So I did a blog post about it. What does university cost? And I tracked down a first, second and third year student and I said, tell me everything. What does it cost? And so now I know that a year of university costs about 30 grand a year. Hall of residence, 24 grand, 10,000 for fees, et cetera. Then she's got to live, et cetera. So we've budgeted on about 30 grand. So there's things like that. And then just looking ahead to, you know, we drive a car. What do cars do? They get old. They break down. Okay, let's put some money aside to fix it. Let's put some money aside because one day it is going to go pop and we're going to have to replace it. So we're just always allocating money to the future, just in sinking funds, which are just separate bank accounts with their own suffix, and they've got a purpose like health, car repairs, schooling for our daughter, etc. And every single week, money goes off into those accounts, but it's not just a made up amount. It's based in fact. Like, I looked back, for example, in 2024, what did we spend on our daughter to go to school? $2,000, whatever it was. $2,000 divided by 52 weeks is whatever it is. So once a week, that amount of money goes into that bank account. So it's always growing, always growing. So that's how we've managed to live this really, just this, we're so fortunate. It's just awesome. We've just got this nice lifestyle. We work when we want, and we both are still working. Like, Johnny works 2 days a week, and of course I gave up my job last year, but now I just work on the blog when I want to. Yeah, so we've just given ourselves options. We've been thinking about this, you know, how can we allocate every dollar we make well? And I always say we just make more good money decisions than bad ones.
To be able to sustain a family on one part-time income is pretty wild, is pretty impressive. How long did it take you to get your money to a point where you could do that? Was that a thing where you were building up savings and investments? Did that take quite a while?
So the difference was that we made money, and then once we stopped spending all the money, we started saving the money. When I finished my job so I could have our child, we would have put, I can't remember the amount now, but we would have saved up $20,000 to $30,000 of money. So that was sitting there. So we had Johnny's income coming in, but if we were short for whatever reason, then that we can tap into that sinking fund, that savings account. And then we just kind of built on that. We're like, well, that worked. And so why don't we create more and more of this? But it was really when we twigged onto the investing. And with starting with KiwiSaver, which is fabulous, starting with that and then just looking at that in my net worth, and 1 month it's worth 5,000, the next month it's worth 5,500, 6,000, off we go and going, this works. And so once we started to pile money into an ETF investment outside of KiwiSaver, once we hit our first 100,000 invested, that's when the snowballing starts to take effect. And that's when you think, I'm going way off track from your question here, Francis, but that's where you start to notice the things you are doing are compounding and growing, which makes you want to do more of that and less of the frittering, wasteful spending, etc. So we just kind of, our behaviours ebbed and flowed. Less trips to Bunnings, more trips to online portal to invest money each month, basically. Yeah.
I think that's very true, though. When you first start to get some of that positive feedback of, I'm actually achieving these goals and I can do things like step back and do part-time work and spend more time with my kid. And you start to get that positive feedback of, oh, this is feeling really good to be in control. And it's feeling better than some of those other things did that were taking up the money before. I mean, does your life now look like what you pictured it would when you first started saving and investing?
I've never been a massive goal setter, so I don't think I ever step back and see what would my perfect day be. I've never done that sort of thing. It's kind of,
says the person who is amazing at setting goals with money, but sure.
yeah. But it's just because life changes so much and I've led quite an interesting life. And basically if something occurs to me that I want to go and do that, then I'll go and do that. And so get back to me in 5 years and hopefully I've been doing more interesting things. So we just want freedom over our time and to use that time in whatever way we feel like using it. Today, I'm using my time to sit down and have a lovely chat with you. So, and what does our life look like now? We live in central Otago. We live in Alexandra. It's just stunning here. So my mornings are spent exercising. So like I've got a swimming pool 300 metres away. I've got mountains to run in. I can walking tracks around here. We've set up a wee gym in our workshop. Our daughter's home from school for the next 2 weeks, so we'll annoy her by actually speaking to her, trying to hang out with her. And then Johnny and I love to travel, but with just the economy being what it is at the moment and because we've got these future priorities, which is her heading off to uni and stuff, we haven't been able to travel this year. We did a trip at the start of the year, but no more international travel. So Johnny and I have a sinking fund for having some fun. And so the other week, we're like, oh, sure, we have a night in Queenstown. So we just book a nice hotel and pop over there for a night. And we just have, you know, 2 days of climbing up some mountains and eating some yummy food and staying somewhere lovely and coming back home again. So our days are whatever we want it to be. But it's certainly we're at this kind of tipping point when our daughter heads off to uni. Both of us are entirely mobile with everything we do. So the blog, I can write and help people from anywhere. He works for a company 2 days a week from home. So we are planning. We're going to come up and visit you, Francis. We're planning on really traveling locally a lot more next year. And then we're planning to get back overseas again as well for extended periods of time.
That is so exciting. Honestly, I love those plans. I mean, you have talked about some of the small steps you made, which, you know, good, consistent, saving, investing, looking at what you wanted, tracking your net worth. These are all fantastic things. But of course, you also chose the share market as your main tool for building the wealth that still gives you options. Because I think cutting back is brilliant and being frugal and knowing what you want to spend your money on is brilliant. But also at some point, in order to be able to be work optional, you need income coming in from other sources, right? So you said, share market looks brilliant. Where did you start on getting comfortable with that? Because I know a lot of people I talk to, there are so many people who are interested in investing in the share market, but they find it a bit intimidating, I think. To get started is often the hardest part. So what got you interested in shares and how did you get comfortable with them?
I got interested in shares because I knew I didn't want to buy another house. And we paid off our house. And so then I'm like, well, what do we do next? So I went to the bank and asked them, and they said, well, you're going to buy another house as a rental property. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I don't want one of those. I just paid mine off. And I just had no interest in rental properties. And to me, even back then, the math just didn't make sense. So I went looking for the alternative. And so again, I asked the bank for the alternative. And they said managed funds. So that's actually what we started investing in, was managed funds. And then it was reading, honestly, life-changing, J.L. Collins, The Simple Path to Wealth. I read his book and that sort of changed everything to me. That gave me the crash course I needed on share market investing. So I had been investing in like bonus bonds, managed funds, that sort of thing. So our investing had started and we had some money sitting there and growing, But once I dug into the managed funds and the fees that they were charging, which at that point were undisclosed, they didn't have to tell us what fees they charged. And I remember, Francis, I was on the phone to them going,
really? Hang on, what on that? I didn't know that was a phase in our investing landscape, that they didn't have to tell you fees.
Absolutely not. So I was with ANZ and, ANZ Investments, managed funds, and I rang them. I'm like, what are the fees you're charging? And they said, well, the fees are taken, you'll get your returns. We work out your return. We take our fee off, then we give you the rest of the money. And it's like, well, okay, but
yes,
how much did you take off? And she was like, well, don't worry about it because we've taken that off and here's your return and it is X percent. And it's like, but what did you take? I want to know if I'm paying for a service, what did you take? And she's like, don't worry about it. We've taken it. And I remember having this really frustrating conversation.
This is giving me like the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah. And I just like smelled a dirty, dirty rat. And that sent me reading, looking. And then from there, it sort of came down to I just want to manage my own money because at every turn I came up against a business who I was the product and they were trying to make money out of me. And so I just wanted to manage my own money and not have anybody else's hidden agenda in it. And so reading, understanding, learning, J.L. Collins, A Simple Path to Wealth. And basically he said the investment industry is massive, massive industry. And he has this nice analogy and he says, think of a buffet table full of food and there's foods from all over the world and every food represents a company or a provider, a fund manager, you know, type of food. He said, what you can do is you can go to that table and you can sweep off 99% of the food on that table and you can just eat the one thing. And he said, that is what an ETF or an index fund is like. You, with one purchase, are buying the best companies in the US, you know, the US 500 or in a global fund, buying 3,000 companies in the world. And he just went into such depth as to why it is so efficient to do that. Because all these fund managers who are picking and choosing stocks to put into a fund are picking and choosing stocks and they are taking a guess at what sector is going to do well, what country is going to do well. They are trying to guess the future. Humans are horrifically bad at guessing the future. But if you just buy all the companies all the time, the share market goes up over time. And so like there was reference the other day to the company NVIDIA and like, oh man, if we'd only all known about that when it was this big and now it's this big. Well, if you just buy a massive global fund and within that, way down the bottom with 0.001% of the percentage of the fund is the next NVIDIA. You don't know what it's going to be, nor do I, nobody does. But by owning this global fund, those big players are there and they'll come through over time. So like the current big players, check in 20 years, we're going to be going Facebook who? It was just such a relief to learn that I didn't have to pick companies and I simply have been buying all the companies every single month without fail for coming up to a decade now and it works. And this is the thing too, like when people are just starting and you're looking for knowledge, the best indicator of your success is your own numbers. And this is why I love tracking my net worth. It's like I can see, you know, back in 2020, how much I put into this investment and what it is worth today. And then I use my numbers to see how my wealth is growing. Like Mary Holmes, she often mentions the rule of 72 and the likes of that and how long does it take for your money to double. And so I can go back to my own numbers and I can say, well, today our investment value is almost 700,000 and back in 2020 or whenever it was, I'd have to look, it was 350,000. So, my wealth has doubled. The more you do this and the more you check in with yourself, the more I tune out with what everybody's telling me about what the share market's doing. You know, like somebody in the weekend was saying to me, the share market is overvalued. And it's like, well, is it? It's willing buyer, willing seller. That's what it's worth today.
Also, and you could also make the argument that it's undervalued at the moment because the economy is having an absolute mare. Everyone's panicking and freaking out and don't have much spare money to invest either. But the businesses are having a tough time through no fault of their own. And that is simply what the share market is, buying a piece of a business. And so I would actually feel like it's a little bit undervalued at the moment. Putting aside things like NVIDIA, which like there's an argument there that maybe there's a little bit of a bubble happening. But if you're indexing and you've got hundreds of companies in your index fund, it doesn't really matter. It's really funny. Me and my husband, mildly competitive couple, just a smidge. We do like to compare notes all the time. And so I am hardcore index funds. I'm super lazy. I have two kids. I'm boring as hell. I keep an eye on the share market for my job, but not a close enough eye to be trying to pick winners and things like this for my own personal investing strategy. For my own personal investing strategy, I am just such a believer in exactly what you've talked about, a good low fee fund. These days, thankfully, it is now very much part of the legal requirements that they have to tell you the fees. So that's good. That blows my mind that they were trying not to tell you. I want to spend some more time on that off mic. But, you know, now, you know, you find a good low fee fund, global, heaps of different companies in it. It's just so easy. And my husband and I were comparing the other day. We've both been investing for several years now. And so he was like checking his investments and where they were at. And he was like, well, I am up 30 whatever percent now and I'm doing really well. And I was like, oh, yeah, shall I check on mine? And he was like, yes, do. And so I pulled mine up, just checked the numbers, put it in, and I was like, 44%. To be clear, that's over a period of years. That's not like 1 year's return. 44% in a year would be insane.
But that's even better, the fact that it's over many years. And so this is not an anomaly. This is not, oh, we've had two great months and I'm up 50%. This is year on year on year. And it's like, if I thought that there was a better way to go about this, I would be doing that. But it's like, this absolutely works. And so when people say to me about, oh, but I've got shares in so-and-so, it's like, well, I've probably got shares in that as well, actually, because if it's any good, it's in a...
it's in my fund somewhere.
Yeah, it's in a Total World fund. So I'm so delighted that I don't have to think about it anymore. It's just I found an investment that that works. And so why would I spend my time researching companies and all that? I'm just not interested. Like, yeah, and it's been so nice with my daughter to talk to her about investing as well, and like getting her over that hump. If you don't save, you save to go to university, but you invest for long term growth. And if you just consistently put a portion of every single dollar you earn into a Total World Fund type investment, global fund, and just let it roll, you will be fine. You don't have to learn this whole new genre. It's as simple as doing it that way. And I think, so coming back around to your question of when people are just starting out, we've created this industry that makes people feel, particularly women, inadequate. We don't have the intelligence to work this out. It's really, really complicated. And it's just not the case. It's just not the case. For people wanting to start out, like resources, J.L. Collins, The Simple Path to Wealth, read my blog because I'm always talking about this sort of stuff. The Rebel Finance School, the English couple, Alan and Katie Donegan, for the last 5 or 6 years, they have done a free 10-week course every single year. Tons of Kiwis on that course. It's, and this whole really community has come up in New Zealand because of it, and just get some good, I mean, money done well is just so basic. So basic. So just go back to the basics and do them consistently. Year, month on month, year on year, do it consistently.
And stick with it. And stick with it. Because even though I'm ripping on my husband, because he does still, I want to say, he does still love a good index fund. That's probably the core of it. But he can't help himself picking some winners around the side of it. But he has also stuck with it for years, and so have I. So I might be winning and putting that on the podcast just to have that, you know, on the record that I'm winning with my lazier, pure index strategy. But we've stuck with it years and it's going great.
It's going great, yeah. And the thing with your husband, because, you know, I'll talk to people and they'll say, oh, but I bought company X and it is doing blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, so when are you selling it?
Yes.
You know, because every company crests that wave. And so when's your time to exit? What's your plan with this? Because, and this is the beauty of investing in ETFs or index funds, is we don't have to think about that. Oh, it's peaked. I need to get my money off the table and now invest it over here. It's like, no, you buy and you hold, and then you reach a point where you look at the stash of investments you've got over here, and then you use your money, because this is where a lot of people, when they're starting investing, they don't think, why am I investing? The point is, and I always say, it's to grow lots of $100,000, and for every $100,000 you have invested, one day when you don't want to work anymore, you can harvest the cream off the top of that by selling 4 to 5% of it, $4,000 to $5,000 of it, bring that money home as income, and that's tax-free income in New Zealand, and that replaces the income that you've just given up. So if you can, like Johnny and I currently have almost $700,000 invested, so that's, you know, up to sort of $35,000 a year, technically, we could sell off that and that replaces our income. And we have actually, just to test the theory, in the last couple of years, we've sold off a percentage of our total net worth because we wanted to do some international travel and stuff like that. And what do you know? It kind of grew right back again. So, yeah, we haven't taken any out this year. We haven't needed to, but we now know, because I sort of keep an eye on it, our money invested, which includes the KiwiSaver as well, like we could draw a passive income off that of about, I think it's about $2,900 a month. We could safely pull money off that, and our big stash will continue to compound over time. Yeah.
That's amazing. And I remember the last time we talked, as you say, we talked 3 years ago. And I think there's the work optional and then there's the financial freedom, slightly different things. And you mentioned that you'd taken about 11 years to hit that, what you consider financial freedom. Like you say, that you're able to take money from the investments, not panic too much about it. You have this stash that is growing and that you can rely on, which is just amazing. And yet, even in that 3 years since we've talked, like you say, it's kept growing, it's kept doing things. So I know people will be dying to know the numbers. What can you share with us of where you're at and what it's looking like?
I wrote it down for you, Frances.
Love it.
So what have I got here? So 3 years ago, the value of our investments was $400,000. So that's our KiwiSavers. Johnny's in KiwiSaver, I'm in KiwiSaver. And it was in I think our money mostly was in the Smart US 500 fund then. Today, the value is $680,000. So KiwiSaver, KiwiSaver, and now we're just in a Smart Total World fund. So all of our KiwiSaver and our investments are in a Total World fund. So that's a $280,000 increase in 3 years. But of course, we've been investing money during that time. So we've put in about $86,000 of that amount. So basically, the share market growth has been about $194,000 over and above what we've put in, which is growth of about $65,000 a year.
That's amazing.
So, and these are the numbers that I'm constantly checking. It's like, okay, is this working? And it's like, yes, we've put money in. The share market has grown, so everything we bought for a dollar is now worth $1.10, $1.20, $1.50, whatever, and it just grows and grows. And the more you can get invested, the more exposure it has to all these companies doing good things, and so it just continues to grow. And the beauty of the Happy Saver is I've just become friends with tons of people who are investing this way, both here in New Zealand, Australia, and just globally. And so that gives me comfort to know that I'm not an anomaly with what I'm doing here. This way of investing works. And by and large, the people I know who have reached their number of having enough invested and then they do quit their day job, they still live to a spending limit. You know, they set a budget for themselves. But all of them, because the share market has just done so well over the last decade, they're all worth more today than when they stopped work, which is amazing. And like Alan and Katie Donegan, who are very open with their numbers, they retired 6 years ago with £1 million, but it really doesn't matter if it's pounds or dollars. And today they're worth $2.3 million because they got all that money invested and they are just in the FTSE Global All Cap Index. And now that, well, they haven't worked for 6 years and they kind of are reaching this point where they won't be able to spend enough. It just keeps growing. And that's the crazy math that I hear you talk about in some of your Instagram reels, the compounding. It's hard to wrap your head around it sometimes.
This is the thing, you know, I'll have people say to me, you know, should I put it in a term deposit or the share market? And I'm like, whoa, those are two totally different things that will get you two totally different results. You know, very safe money in a term deposit, not going to grow much. And I think it's really hard for our brains to automatically wrap around how much growth you can get from the share market. And I love the share market because you can start if you've just got $5. You can start small. You can work your way up, sort of learn as you go, and then build it up a bit more. And the way it starts growing alongside is key. Saving your way to financial freedom is so hard because you'll be earning every dollar yourself. And most of us aren't paid CEO money, but to have it invested and growing with you, whatever amount is right for you and that you can afford, so powerful. I mean, the numbers you're talking about there, very impressive. But I think the fact that you're talking under $1 million for yourself, but you've still achieved work optional and financial freedom, potentially is not what a lot of people expect. I think a lot of people expect you to say, oh, I've got $1 million invested or $2 million invested. Do you think you can do this with less money than people expect?
Absolutely. Like Johnny and I, for many, many years, were considered low income earners. Like we were offered a community services card at one point, sort of thing. So we, and I was chatting to a couple just yesterday and they're like, how does everybody else do it? And so I look, this is why I share my story, because they actually earn more than I do. And so the difference is you get out of debt and it's like, I hear people talk about good debt, bad debt. And it's like, no, it's just money you owe somebody else. And anytime you owe somebody money, that is a sliver of every single paycheck going to somebody else. And that is money that you cannot invest. And so the trick is don't take on debt. And if you have it, get out of debt, which includes your house. I mean, because what's the point of having them? Why did you get a mortgage? It's because you couldn't afford to buy the house with cash. Most people can't afford to buy a house with cash. But for me, if I could have, I would have, but I couldn't. So I got a mortgage and then I paid it off, gave me my income back to invest. I've got off track here, Francis. But
I like it though. Continue. It's a great track.
Welcome to a conversation with me. Yeah. But it's stop excusing your behaviors because you say you don't earn enough. Everybody is different and everybody spends their money differently as to where their values lie. But stop kidding yourself that where you are choosing to use your money is going to lead to growth. So like, for example, if you're like, oh, it's really tough. I really worry about my retirement. I'm only 40 years old, but retirement's coming. I've got no money for retirement. But then in the next breath, you're saying, oh, I'd want to replace my car. It's like, well, what are you going to give priority to? I would give priority to my retirement and start getting that money squirreled away from the age of 40 for retirement. And then off on the side, I would have a bank account, a sinking fund, and I would be putting some money in that to replace my car. I mean, most people go, it's a want, not a need to replace their car. It's like, oh, it's got 80,000 Ks on it. I'm like, man, you're just running this thing in. So I think a lot of people look at everybody else going and say, woe is me, but then in their own home, they're making some really poor financial choices. Like Johnny and I went out for lunch a couple of weeks ago with some friends and it cost us $200, you know, $200 to go out for lunch. And we enjoyed it and we could afford to do that. And we'd put, you know, we have a fun account, the holiday account for that sort of thing. But I thought, wow, if you did that as a matter of course, a $200 lunch each week, no wonder you got no money. And so for Johnny and I, we just prioritized what was important to us and investing it's right up there with food.
Yeah. And when I think about it sometimes as well, I can easily look at other people's lives and maybe want some of it. And for starters, I have no idea how they're funding that. they could have the most insane credit card bills that they're literally waking up at 3 a.m, unable to sleep. But even if they're not, I kind of look at it and I'm like, I don't know that I want to live like everyone else. I want to have options that other people don't have. And I'm very lucky that even in the short amount of time, you know, relatively a short amount of time that I've been prioritizing money and doing that, I have built a life that has given me the type of flexibility that I never thought I would have, where I am there for every single school drop off and pick up. I'm super involved in my kids' lives. I try not to talk about them too much on the podcast because it's their life and I don't want to infringe on their privacy. But my life totally revolves around my family and kids. And I feel very lucky that that is my life, that I can do my work, I can do it flexibly on my terms, and then have the life where it's the priorities that I want. And let's be honest, that takes money. It's a really harsh reality. I often wish that wasn't the case, but wishing it wasn't the case doesn't make it not the case. You know, it takes money to build these options for yourself, and changing my money has given me very real, tangible options of money isn't the most important thing in the world, but it impacts everything else that is, you know?
It's pretty darn handy, yeah. I particularly with my podcast, like I started doing the podcast because I got to chat and or talk through email with so many amazing people who thought they couldn't, who then did. And just this turnaround, and that's what I do on my podcast. I talk to people who are doing well financially. We know enough in the world about people or the struggles, so what can you do to fix it? And I love talking to people who they're like, oh, I've got a mortgage and it's got 10 years to run. And I'm like, you only owe $100,000. Don't wait 10 years. Get after it. No, Ruth, we cannot, because we've got, and they'll reel off all these things. And it's like, well, math is math. You could if you changed your priorities. Like, some people email me this huge email, backwards and forwards we go, and then never hear from them again until 3 years later. They pick up on the same thread and they're like, I never responded because I thought you were an idiot. But Ruth, we have just paid off a house, or we have just got our first $100,000 invested, or whatever it might be. And I know that people can transform their lives, their financial lives, so much faster than most people believe they can, but they just have to start doing something which initially feels a bit uncomfortable. You know, you're not going out to the $200 restaurant each week, you're inviting your friends over instead. But when you track your numbers and you start to see those good behaviors compounding, people just go for it. It's the coolest thing. There's two types of people. The people that slowly turn the waka around to go in the other direction, little changes. And then there's the people who are just like full noise, U-turn, gone. And those people, I love coming across those people because they make such rapid change. And they're the people who are like, why did nobody teach me this in school? You know, why didn't I know about this earlier? And then they've got some new information and they're just off. And to those people, I always say, do you have children? Yes, I do. We'll talk to your children about this, because I don't want them emailing me in 20 years' time going, why did my parents not tell me about money? It's like, talk to your kids about or everything you're doing about your money. Like, I've got a almost 18-year-old. We talk so openly about money. What's the big deal? She's great with money. That's the big deal.
Include them in those conversations, right? Of the conversations and the decisions that you are making, especially as a teenager. They're no longer blurting things out randomly to strangers. My money earns this much. How much do you earn? You know, teenagers now know that that's maybe not an icebreaker. So you can have like open conversations.
They are not doing that. I had the coolest conversation with my daughter yesterday, because about a year and a half ago, I got her signed up to PocketSmith, which is the incredible budgeting tool that I've been using for a number of years, because I thought she's going to leave home at some point. She needs to know how to manage her money. So she's been using that for a while. I've been a very hands-off mum. I showed her how to use it, let her go, but I check in from time to time. And so yesterday I said to her, hey, you know, thinking about next year, can you tell me in last month, what did you earn and what did you spend? So she quickly pulled up those figures and we just had a chat about that. And so like last month she spent $300 and she earned $1,000. And I said, well, this is spot on. You are spending less than you earn. And with her, up until quite recently, for every dollar she earned, half of it got invested in a Total World Fund. So when we're here, she's earned $1,000. Basically, $500 of that is hers to spend, which is a spending rate. It's far too high for me, but negotiation, that's what we ended up with. So the fact she was spending $300 means that, good for you, you are spending below the budget you've set yourself. But then that started another conversation. It's like she's starting to realize now, she's got her own car and things, that her costs are rising. And so to earn $1,000 is no longer going to be enough, because she's seeing these costs rising, you know, $70 to put petrol in the car. So we have this conversation about, well, how's this going to change? And this investing 50% is no longer going to be viable in the coming years, because she's got university to pay for. So, okay, let's cut your investing down to 20%, which breaks my heart, but she only makes so much money. And so the point of all this, Frances, is to say we are having these conversations at home whilst we can talk about it with each other, not like she leaves home, sort it out yourself, which so many parents do. And I just think that's just doing a huge disservice to your kids.
Yeah, being biffed out into the world and having to figure all of this out from scratch is a little bit full on. Hopefully, you wouldn't send your kids out not knowing how to cook. And I just don't understand why we wouldn't send them out not having talked about money either. But for those people who, you know, you mentioned, and I come across this a lot too, so many New Zealanders who do feel like financial freedom is out of reach. It, not for people like me, is, you know, a phrase that I do come across a lot. And I'm like, well, you can have a version of it. There may be different versions available to people on gigantic tech salaries, and I'm not going to dispute that. But I think there are different versions available to different people, and it's just deciding what do you want from life. So if there are people who feel like that, who feel like financial freedom is out of reach for them, are there any myths that you could bust that makes it feel a bit more accessible?
Yeah, the myth of why not you? You know, I started with nothing. I started with absolutely nothing. And it's like, yeah, why not me? And I don't want to be a high-earning CEO working every hour of the day. So it's like, well, how can I feel that my money is within our control? Why not me? I'm going to go out and work it out for myself. And like, people might look at the amount that I've got invested and go, oh, phew, that's like, I could chump chain. You know, that's nothing to them. And other people might think it's a lot.
But look at the life that you've built with it.
Yeah. What I have is absolutely irrelevant to everybody else. And like, when people get in touch with me and I do these phone friends and things, we have a yarn, and I'm like, well, what are you spending? And they're like, oh God, you're not going to like this, Ruth. And it's like, I don't care what you spend your money on. It's whether it is right for you. I would say to those people, block out the noise, turn off everything. You know the basics, forget the other people. This is about you, your partner, your home, your whare, your whānau. This is about you. So concentrate on your own numbers and make good decisions with every single dollar that comes into your life. Yeah. And if your gut instinct is telling you that's a dumb idea, don't do it. It is a dumb idea. And if you do go ahead and do it and you think, shit, that was a dumb idea, don't do it twice.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And this is something I was just talking about the other day on the pod as well. No mistake has to be fatal. We are going to make mistakes in life. That's fine. We make mistakes in so many other areas of our life, and we know that we can pick ourselves up and dust off. Money is no different. No mistake has to be fatal. You just go, really shouldn't have done that. How about I not do that again? It's a really important one.
Yeah. I always talk in that vein about saying we are suboptimal in so many areas of our life. It's like, you know, people know that they should be eating really healthy, you know, no sugar and blah, blah, blah. But we all have chocolate after dinner and stuff, you know. But
that's sugar and tomato sauce. You can't avoid it.
That's right. And a bit of salt on it. Thank you very much. But when we get to investing, we're told that there is only one way, and it is the way. And so when you go into any website and it's plug your numbers in here and we will tell you what you're going to be worth in 30 years, it's kind of, that's pointless, because you don't know where you are going with this. And so that is why get a few tools under your belt, like track your net worth, spend less than you earn, invest the difference, and then track that progress and just continue to do more of that. And then I think that your own numbers are the better predictor of your future wealth than popping your details into some random website that will then get your email address and go, well, I think you should be in this KiwiSaver fund because I get a kickback from the provider. Not that I'll tell you about that sort of thing. And also with money, it's like you're never one and done. Like you and I are still constantly tweaking things. Yep. You know, I spend more time looking at our money than I should, but it's just because I'm writing about it and stuff like that. But
it's fun.
But we enjoy it because we're weird like that. But it's if I wasn't blogging about it and stuff like that, I would still be checking in with, you know, PocketSmith. What have I earned? What have I spent? Looking at my bank accounts. Have I got the money in the right places to do the things I need? We're always tweaking and adjusting course. And then from time to time, I'll sort of step back and have a real reset and make a big change. But whenever I make a change, like I changed my KiwiSaver, it started to dawn on me that this is not the right fund for me to be in. It was becoming too actively managed. And it's like, okay, I'm going to read a few key resources that I value. I'm going to talk to Johnny. I'm going to look at things. I will make that change. So I never make knee-jerk decisions with our money either. And then just adjust a course, off we go again. And I'll check in with that KiwiSaver in another year. Am I still happy with the fund I'm in? If I'm not, I'll pivot. If I am, which I think I will be, I'll just keep going. So people watching this, you people out there, you can do this. You can do this. I've seen the most epic turnaround stories from people who are on the bones of their ass, renting, feeling, you know, paycheck to paycheck, those awful cue cards and store cards and credit cards, and they've just week by week got themselves slightly better, slightly better, slightly better. And it's once they got out of debt, then they start to grow, start to build, start to build. So yeah, you can do it. You can do it.
I am such a believer in that as well. And I think you make such a good point there. Because I think a lot of us, and it's a really easy and very human trap to fall into, but it's still a trap, where you look at people on level 5 and you say, I want that. That looks really good, but I can't reach that. So there's no point. But you don't get to level 5 from level 1. At level 1, you're doing sort of $5 a week. You're checking your budget. You're asking for a pay rise. You're trying to pay off any debt that you might have. You're making little choices. But those little choices then bed in and they make it so that level 2 is easier to access. And at level 2, you might increase the amount that you're investing. You don't have any debt now, so you can funnel more into those long-term goals. You get a pay rise, you get up to level 3. And each level you go up makes the next one so much easier to reach. You're not going to jump up those levels straight away. But genuinely, to get from level 4 to level 5 isn't that hard. It's, I often think sometimes going level 1 to level 2 is the hardest, because it's that mindset of this is worth it and those little changes start to bed in, but you're not getting the feedback yet. I often think those first steps are the hardest, but most worth it, right?
Absolutely. 100% agree. Yeah. And like with the investing thing as well, like that's why I'm so pleased, Ace Parenting, getting my daughter investing from such a young age.
Yeah.
When initially when I would say to her, literally give us your physical pocket money, let's cut it in half, I'm going to invest half of that for you. She was like, no, stop taking my money, you're robbing me, blah, 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 blah. Did it anyway, robbed her anyway, invested that money. And then as time went on, and I'd say, like, I use Sharesies to help her invest. I think it's an overpriced platform, but it's a great platform for young people to learn. And so then, you know, every week it's like, come here, here's your money, invest. Here's your money, invest, 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 invest. And then with, you know, a year, 2 years under her belt, she can now see that she's put this much in, but the growth has been this much, and that she didn't have to go to work for that growth. That's while she was lying in bed as a teenager, now she was making money. So just start. You'll be amazed at what you're capable of, but track your progress so you can give yourself a pat on the back in a year's time, 2 years' time. And then like Johnny and I, and probably yourself, 10 years down the track, you're like, holy moly, look how far we've come. Mm.
Well, exactly. I think that's a beautiful note to leave it on. When you look back, are there moments that you can pick out that make you think, yes, you know, there would have been some sacrifices along the way, even if they were sacrifices that you were happy to make. So are there moments where you look at me and think, that made it so worth it?
I'm here for a good time every time. So every day I get out of bed, I want to have a good day. So I don't know if there's key moments. It's probably reaching milestones where I tipped over another 100. So like we're about to tip over 700,000 invested. And that's like, whoo, that feels that. Okay, we're getting there. We're getting there. I look back and think, well, this is cool how it's working out. And I look forward thinking, well, this is exciting. I've got a plan for this. The plan will evolve and change. But what's next? What's next? What's next? Yeah. Reaching a million is going to be pretty cool.
That's so exciting. And it's the rate of growth you're seeing, that's not going to take long now at all.
No, I don't think it is. The next step is we want to retire Johnny from his two-day-a-week job, and then we'll just have the blog and we'll have passive income that we can draw off our investments if we want to. And then it's once our daughter leaves home, we don't have to be here, so we can lock up the house and we can ticky tour off wherever you want. Probably going to downsize as well because we've got the net worth. We could retire tomorrow, but $950,000 of it is locked up in a house. So we're looking to change that. I mean, I keep on Pocketsmith, it shows me a nice pinwheel of where our money is. Currently, it's slightly more in the house than in the investments. And I can't wait till the day that I look at that pinwheel and I see investments take up the biggest chunk of it in our house. Takes up the smallest chunk. When I reach that day, I know we've sort of made it. Yeah. And I'm just delighted that I get to share how we've grown wealth without going down the route of real estate investing. It's yes. Like, oh, why would you? Why would you?
No, exactly. I just love it for you. And I can't wait to check in when we get to the point where you have hit that point on the pinwheel. We'll go through your numbers again. Look, Ruth Henderson from The Happy Saver. I'm sure lots of people will want to be following you. If they somehow haven't come across you before, they're going to want to follow you now. So where can we find all of the wonderful places you put your info?
So just go to thehappysaver.com. That is my website. And you can subscribe there to my email. Every fortnight I put out a blog post. Mostly every fortnight I put out a blog post. And every 3 weeks I put out a new podcast episode where I just interview everyday Kiwis. Like, you do not know these people. A lot of them are anonymous. They are just Joe Blow average. And I talk to them about their money. I've got 115 episodes out now, I think, Francis. And they are such a cool resource for people who want to talk to people about money but don't have anybody to talk to. That's what my podcast is about. They kind of get to lift the lid on what other people are doing with their money. So, yeah, so that's where you can find me, either the podcast or the blog.
And personally, I love having a little nosy through what other people are doing. It's all well and good to talk about what we should be doing, but I love talking about what other people are actually doing. So that's why I love your stuff.
I know.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Ruth Henderson from The Happy Saver. Go check out all those places where she puts out amazing money content. It really is such good stuff. And of course, before you go, if this has been helpful to you, hit subscribe to Making Sense and send it on to a friend as well so we can all get better with money together. Until next time, have a great day.
Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.